everybody, and welcome to this week's Highs and Lows in Wrestling on the unofficial WWE podcast. If you hear some crinkling in the background, that is my dog, and there is nothing I can do about it this week, so we're in for a good one tonight, guys. Let's jump right in.
Hardy with a powerful right hand knocking Sammy Guevara through the stage.
I want a divorce. Oh!
I told you, I was gonna ruin yours!
I feed a whole family with this title!
All right, everybody, I hope you have had a wonderful week this March, mid-March, and like I said, we got a whole lot to talk about. I'm sorry, I'm about a day later than I normally like to upload this show or have Matt upload this show. As I think I've mentioned before, I'm engaged and we had some wedding planning stuff that interfered with my normal podcasting schedule. And sadly, not sadly, if you're listening to this wonderful fiance, but happily, the wedding stuff took precedence this week. But nonetheless, we are still here today on a Sunday, March 14th. And what a week to talk about. I mean, if you guys listen to my AEW Dynamite review, you know that there was a whole lot of damage control that needed to be done, and I thought it was done really well. There was a beautiful swerve at the end of the show, and we're definitely going to get into that. No spoilers. And yeah, a whole lot of other stuff on WWE television too. Some new titles introduced, and that's another thing we're definitely going to get into. But I guess that's my perfect transition to the low for the week, which is going to NXT and this whole women's championship shenanigans. Let me give you guys a quick little bit of context.
After the unfortunate happenings of last week and the injustice of the WWE Women's Tag Team Championship that I'm afraid that you had to go through, the NXT team have decided to make a decision ourselves. You are the new NXT Women's Champions.
All right, guys. Yeah, for any of you who may have missed NXT this week because there was an amazing show on Dynamite, or you just didn't get around to watching it. This happened, and it was definitely rumored to be happening since last week when William Regal made the announcement of two game-changing things that they were going to do to NXT. And in case you guys, again, like I said, missed it, the other announcement was a two-night takeover, which honestly, I get, and that just quickly sidebar under that, and I don't know if they have enough to fill two nights, maybe. They definitely have enough talent. Do they have enough storyline prowess, considering most of this company can't tell a storyline without a title? And we will get into that, too. That's a whole nother rant. But I don't know if they could fill two nights well, at least. Let me put it that way. With well-developed storylines. But in regards to into that, I think I... There's that crinkling. I think I would have said that they should have put NXT on the WrestleMania card this year. You know, with everything going on in the world, I think that would have been a great change and a new mix-up, and have the NXT titles, like the ones that, I think that NXT Women's title is probably the most prestigious title in WWE right now. It's so well-protected. Io Shirai is so unbelievably talented. So I would have had those championships be defended at WrestleMania instead of, you know, have it be TakeOver WrestleMania. Funny wordplay. I think that all would have worked out well. And it is not like it's not like Finn Balor is unfamiliar with the main roster. So, and WrestleMania. I think he won his first intercontinental title there as well in that awesome triple threat a couple years back. So that's what I have to say about the two-night main event thing, but on to the official low for the week and the audio I just gave you guys. I mean, I think this is one of the worst decisions that WWE has made in a long time. So I'm going to do my best to dictate myself as organized as possible, because I have a lot of thoughts in regards to these new title belts. But first, quickly, a little background for you guys that don't know or didn't hear in the news about this. It was reported that the reason there was that whole debacle with Adam Pearce last week, and of course another, you know, non-finish to another title match on NXT with the women last week, was because they didn't have the titles built and done in time. So I think the official or the regular plan was to, the original, that's the word I'm looking for. The original plan was to just award Kai and Gonzalez the titles after the tournament. But because the belts weren't going to be ready in time, they had to do this whole big crappy setup with Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax that nobody came out looking good in. Not at all. And so the consolation prize for losing last week was you guys still get title belts, and they're just different title belts. All right, so let's start here, I guess. Let me say that the typical, right, human psychology of supply and demand. This is how this works, right? Okay, so there's a company, a clothing company that I really like, and I wanted to buy a sweatshirt from them a little while ago, and the sweatshirt was a little under $200. And you guys are thinking, you're absurd. Why would you spend $200 on a sweatshirt? And I was thinking the same thing about myself because it's stupid. But because these clothes go, you know, are sold so quickly, you know, go out of stock within minutes, literally, when they go on sale, I was willing to spend $200 for a stinking sweatshirt that's no better or worse than any other sweatshirt I could probably buy for $20, because supply and demand. There's only a few of them out there. I wanted one. They cost more, so they're worth more, supposedly, right? Even though they're not any different than any other sweatshirt I have, really. But just by the supply and demand of it, right, there's not a lot of them, so they're worth more. You can charge more for them, right? Human psychologized me into getting a $200 sweatshirt. Don't regret it, but it wasn't smart. And so that's my, I guess, analogy for these title belts, right? The more that there are, the less prestigious they are. So let's count all the titles in WWE, right? You've got the NXT Cruiserweight belt, the NXT Champions Men's Championship belt, the NXT Men's Tag Team Championship belt, the NXT World title, the Women's World title. That's five belts on a 2-hour show. Five belts, 2 hours. And I'm not even going to go through all of, right? You've got two SmackDown Raw titles. You've got Universal World. You've got Intercontinental US. You've got the Women's Tag Team title belts. You've got a SmackDown Women's title belt and the Raw Women's title belt. Like, what? It is, you've got, I don't know how many people, you know what, let's do this math. Let's look up how many people on the roster and how many titles there are, and let's see your mathematical chances of technically having a belt. Oh, and I cannot forget the R-Truth 24/7 I-95 South title. All right, guys, a little math later, or a little math done now. And I didn't separate the titles between men and women because that's just too much work for me right now on a Sunday afternoon. But let's do the math here, right? So including NXT UK and all superstars across all WWE, right? There are 207 superstars total, right? You've got 20 championship belts, again, across all brands, including the 24/7 title. That means that if you are a superstar on the roster, you have about a little less than a 10% chance of holding a title. 9.6 to be precise, but a little bit of a 10% chance of holding a title. I want to know how that's prestigious. And you know what? To compare it, let's go back. Let's go back a couple years to when WWE wasn't so difficult to watch. All right, you guys, so a little math done later. I went back to year 2014 because I wanted to include NXT in this, right? NXT at the time had four major titles. WWE had five, I think, if I'm thinking correctly. Again, I just did the math, but I forget. So I think in total there were nine, right? All across all brands, and there were 173 superstars. So here's, again, your math for the day. That leaves you with a 5% chance of being a champion. So here we are, right, 7 years later, and you've got a whole, I know it doesn't seem like a lot, but a whole 5% added chance to be a champion. That's a lot when you look at it. And my whole point to all this freaking math or whatever is that the value of these titles are about the same value as the $20 sweatshirt that I could buy from TJ Maxx, rather than my $200 sweatshirt, which meant a whole lot more, right, when there were less of them. And so this whole long analogy is for me to say that this decision to bring these NXT women's titles are so stupid for reason one, right? Supply and demand. The more there are, the less it's worth. It's that simple. All right, on to reason two, why I absolutely hate this decision. It kind of goes along with reason one, with the more titles, you know, the less they're worth. But if you think about these women's tag team championships, the main roster ones, I guess is what we'll call them here. Who holds them, right? Shayna Baszler, Nia Jax. I'd give them, they've formed into somewhat of a tag team. We'll call them a tag team. Sorry, I don't buy Naomi and Lana Jax, oh my God. I don't buy Naomi and Lana as a tag team. I think Naomi is her own single star. She should be, and Lana should. Wrestling, it just isn't her thing. In my opinion, maybe she gets back on the mic, or maybe she just works her butt off until she can get better, because it's just, it doesn't work, for me, at least. And I would never want to see someone lose their job. Let me preface this with that. I think, and I give everybody credit, anyone who tries to step between the ropes and take bumps like that, I am not someone who could ever do that. That's why I'm behind a mic, not in the ring. That and a whole bunch of lack of athleticism and talent, but, so you've got Naomi and Lana. Okay, Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke. I can buy that they're a tag team now. The fact that I have to say I can buy they're a tag team now should show you something. Am I missing anyone? On the main roster. An actual tag team. Because it doesn't feel like I'm missing anyone. Oh, the Riot Squad. There we go. The Riot Squad. All right, so you got about four legitimate, if you want to call them that, tag teams in a division fighting for these titles across all across the two main roster brands, right? And I'm calling it that just to, for simplicity purposes. What? So you have a 25% chance, technically, of winning that belt, because if they put some titles on Sasha and Bianca, I'll be upset. This whole thing makes no sense. Let's throw them into the tag team picture again, right? That would have been my low for the week if I didn't have such a strong disagreement with this whole women's tag team titles on NXT. All right, if you add NXT to that, right, you've got a couple more tag teams, and I won't go through them all in NXT for the women's division. Legitimate tag teams, Kayden Carter, Casey Catanzaro is the first one that comes to mind, and Dakota Kai, and Raquel Gonzalez, right? So at least you're making the pool a little bit bigger, but instead of trying to make the pool a little bit bigger, right, for these women's tag team titles, you're going to split the pool, and two-thirds, like four tag teams for one belt, and then like three or four for another one. It just makes no sense. Is anybody following what I'm saying here? Maybe I'm making absolutely no sense, but I don't get this. You've got women's tag team titles already. I really think they should take the men's titles too and unify them, because there's like three tag teams on each brand. It makes no sense. There's no competition. You've got like a third of a chance, genuinely, of having those belts. So there's that. Again, kind of supply and demand, but individualized per each title belt. And reason number three, right? This company has an inability to create storylines outside of titles. They have 15,000 writers, right? And this giant creative team that like switches in and out and in and out, new people and old people and whatever. For a 3-hour show on Raw, a 2-hour show on SmackDown, and a 2-hour show on NXT, let alone main event and whatever. But I don't think that, you know, I don't count that on the show, at least. I don't watch that. There's enough wrestling out there for me to watch on a weekly basis. But you've got all of these people, right? Supposedly these amazing writers, and they can't come up with a storyline about anything else besides revolving a title. And I understand that there have been a couple storylines that do revolve around not a title. Here and there, we'll give them that, right? Randy Orton and Edge, that was one of them for a little while last year. But then, at least if they do this, then it still revolves around the title. So my example for you guys is Roman Reigns and Jey Uso, right? That kind of revolves around family and whatever else. But no, it revolves around who's holding the title at the end of the day. So because you have an inability to create storylines. Some of the best matches come from, let me give you the greatest match of all time, in my opinion, right? Shawn Michaels versus The Undertaker at WrestleMania. The first one. There goes that crinkling. All right. Shawn Michaels versus WrestleMania at 24. WrestleMania 24, I think, if I'm getting the year right. To me, in my opinion, the greatest match of all time. What was that match centered around? Was it centered around a title? Absolutely not, right? The only mention of a title in this whole... I don't know if you guys can hear that, but it's very distracting to me. The only mention of a title in this whole feud was for the second match. And it wasn't for the title. It's because Shawn Michaels cost Undertaker the title so he could face him again at WrestleMania. That was the closest these two guys got to talking about a championship. This was all personal. It was like the end-all be-all that Shawn Michaels had to end the streak. He had to be the person to do it. He became obsessed. Great storyline. Incredible match. The greatest match of all time, in my opinion. In WWE, at least. No title. Some of the greatest storylines, again, I'll repeat myself, some of the greatest storylines have been and have nothing to do with the title, and just, right, like blood feuds, like feuds, I hate this guy and this is why, or whatever, right? MJF versus Cody, no title. Technically, it stemmed from the Chris Jericho match, yes, fair enough, right? But that's perfect. Use a championship to stem other storylines off that, like, amazing match, amazing storyline. This whole thing that we're going to talk about in the high of the week, technically no title involved. Good championship wrestling, good pro wrestling has storylines outside of the title. And instead of hotshotting more and more championships to make every one of your championships mean less, again, because you have a 10% chance of being a champion in WWE, right? Instead of hotshotting more titles on the freaking show, just create more storylines that are intriguing. It's lazy booking, and this company continues to show that they have an inability, right, to book real storylines that it give you the ability to invest in them. And then instead, they just throw two takeover-worthy title matches on a show and then give you a whole new championship titles on the show as well. Like, I'm losing my ability to speak right now about this whole thing. This infuriated me as a company. I hate to make this comparison, but I'm going to do it. And I say that every time I do this, so I guess I don't hate it that much. But AEW, when you think of AEW, can you name the, if you watch it, of course, can you name the world champion, right? Kenny Omega. Can you name the women's champion, Hikaru Shida? And that's a whole other conversation as well. But can you name the tag team champions, right? The Young Bucks. Can you name the TNT champion, Darby Allin? Four titles, 2-hour show. And I could name you about five other freaking feuds going on that have nothing to do with any titles. 2 hours of great television every week, almost every week, and four belts. That's it. I think if they added another belt, it would actually be a terrible idea. Not that there are any plans to do that, but I think that's the perfect sweet spot. You've got, you know, women's championship, so you got an end-all be-all for the women's, end-all be-all for the men's, end-all be-all for the for the tag teams, and then a mid-card title for the men because there's so many men on that roster. Beautiful. Awesome. A place for the men to have matches that aren't world title caliber yet, but still mean something. And all of those titles are protected. And then, also, I could probably tell you, down the line, who was the champion before that person? Who was the champion before that person? Who was the champion before that person? There's a lineage to these titles. Right? Because they matter. And these long reigns. I couldn't tell you who was the U.S. champion before Bobby Lashley. I probably couldn't tell you who was the women's champion before Asuka. Oh, Becky Lynch. All right, fair enough. Before Becky Lynch? No idea. Before Asuka? Oh, I said before Asuka. No, before Sasha Banks, Bayley. Who was before Bayley? No idea. That's my point to this. So let me wrap all this messy analysis with a pretty little bow and say, right, like in conclusion, too many belts, they don't mean anything after a while, right? Too many hotshot championship matches, no storylines outside of the belts. There's 2 hours and five belts or whatever it is, something like that, six belts or something on NXT now. I'm not going to count it again. There's no room for any storylines outside of the belts. There's no time on the show. And then last but not least, right, there are no contenders for these titles, like legitimate contenders. It just makes absolutely no sense to me. Also, I think the women's main card titles, like the tag team titles, look way cooler than the NXT women's titles, personally, but that's it. That's all. I'm done talking about this. I would love to hear your guys' thoughts on this. You can email me at mimi.realwwepodcast@gmail.com. It's M-I-M-I for you who don't know or are first time listener to the show. I don't usually go on that long of a rant, I don't think, but this infuriated me, and I saw it coming, and I was like, please don't do it, please don't do it. And then I saw William Regal in the ring with the little stand and the thing over it. It's like the red velvet little cape over it. I don't know why I can't think of words today, but, and I was like, oh my God, they're doing it. And I'm just as mad about it as I thought I was going to be. And you know what, guys? If they do something with these belts and somehow they figure out the kryptonite to my whole analysis about this whole thing, then I will eat my words. But I would probably bet my house on it, and I don't own a house because I rent, so I'll do it anyways. I'll bet my parents' house on it that they're not going to manage to book any these titles well. I hope within a couple of years they just kind of dissolve like other titles tend to do. And maybe this company can turn something around and actually have their belts mean something. I'm all for the brand split, but I think you should get a little, find your own rules to make sure there are, I really don't think there should be more than maybe 5-6 title belts in that company. With that amount of airtime, 5-6 title belts, again, it makes them mean something. And then you can create storylines underneath the title belts, and that's how you elevate talent, believe it or not, to become contenders for the championships. It's like that easy of a formula, and WWE is just incapable of it. Lately, there's definitely been great booking way back in the day, but lately just seemed to be incapable of it. Oh, and before I forget, totally forgot to mention the freaking match, right? The match for the women's titles on NXT. First of all, rough match, sloppy. I don't know what the... Who's the one who's making these matches not flow so well, because, you know, their Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Championship final match wasn't unbelievable either. And this is NXT. Like, the one thing we can kind of depend on is that the matches are going to be amazing. If the storylines suck, which they probably will. And this match wasn't great either. And then they give the belts to the babyfaces afterwards. You screw the heels out of the titles that you just gave them and give them to the babyfaces. It makes no sense. Absolutely no sense. And I am a giant Ember Moon fan. Coolest finisher in all of wrestling, in my opinion. The Eclipse is unbelievable. And I love her look. I love that she looks different than the other typical, what you would think of like a women's wrestler in WWE. AKA, she's not freaking blonde, right? But what was this? Who came up with this? I guarantee these guys in the back are dropping acid and being like, wouldn't it be funny if we did this? Or they're like, how many viewers do you think we could keep having tune in to NXT every week? And not, excuse me, just WWE every week. Let's give them the worst crap we can think about and see if they stick and stay. It's like a science experiment. Because if that's not going on, I don't know what is, because this made no sense. Again, I'd love to have someone who liked this explain to me why, and this is could be a subjective opinion, but I just don't get it. Don't get it whatsoever. So that's the low for the week. I'm done talking about this. I'm sure you guys are sick of hearing about it, because I feel like I've droned on for more than 20 minutes about it, and that's usually how long this show is. So a couple more things that weren't so great this week. That Shane McMahon, Braun Strowman segment. And again, I don't know if you guys heard, again, in the news, apparently that went according to plan. Just exactly how it was supposed to go. I don't care about Braun Strowman versus Shane McMahon. I don't care. I don't care about Braun Strowman, period, honestly. Get a manager, stop having him talk and spit in the microphone. But did you guys see this week? He had a shirt. Still, it was like a little tight tank top thing, but it was not the olive green muscle shirt. You know, man nipple exposing Under Armour top. It was a little bit different. So maybe we have an impact on this show, because if one thing changed for the better for Braun Strowman, it was that. Still wasn't very flattering, but it was better for sure. So a bunch of other things that I'm not going to get into, because we already talked about the low for almost 20 minutes, I feel like. So I do want to get into some good things. But I think before we do that, I think we have an email that I just quickly want to give a quick shout out to and read that on the air. So let's jump over to our email. All right, you guys. So this week we got an email from Mr. Danny Cool. And Danny says, "Hello, Mimi. It's Danny from the Mailbag Show. My high for the week," and he's talking about last week, or 2 weeks ago, I guess, maybe, "is Bobby Lashley winning the championship. Thank God for that, and I hope he will get a decent opportunity or opponent at Fastlane. My low for the week would be Daniel Bryan losing all the time in his matches. This upset me, as I really want D-Bry to have a push before he retires. Hope you agree with my highs and lows, and I hope to see you next week." Well, thank you, Danny, for the email. Danny from Newcastle. I really appreciate your input, and I agree. I think I said on the show, congratulations to Bobby Lashley, so well deserved. Fun fact too, not that this matters at all, but I think Bobby Lashley is the only WWE champion, or just champion in WWE period, that has alopecia. For you guys who don't know, alopecia is when, you know, it's a disease, an autoimmune disease, I think. Again, I'm talking a little bit over my pay grade, but where essentially you have no hair on your body, and there are tons of other things to do with it as well, but that would explain the headband from way back when. Remember when Bobby Lashley used to wrestle with a headband? And it's like, brings me back to the Sami Zayn storyline with his sisters, and oh God, thank God we are not there anymore, and we are here. But yeah, so congratulations again to Bobby Lashley. And, you know, speaking of lows of the week too, can we talk about how WWE and opened Monday Night Raw with a championship match, a WWE championship match nonetheless? Oh, the times have changed for the worse. But I'm with you, Danny, that congratulations to Bobby Lashley. And that was definitely my high for that week too. I don't think maybe on this show, but it definitely was in my heart of hearts, at least, because Bobby Lashley seems like an awesome guy and definitely deserves, you know, more than he got for the last 14, 16 years, whatever it was. And you know what? While we're on the topic, too, because I'm just ranting on the show, I guess. This is going to be a long show for you guys, so I hope you got the time. The Miz deserves a lot more credit than he gets, I think. And I'm not, like, a Miz stan or anything. But if you go and listen to Renee Paquette's podcast, I'm plugging the show because she's got tens of thousands, billions more listeners than I do, so it doesn't matter anyways. But Renee's podcast, Miz was on it, did a great interview, and I already had respect for The Miz, but more respect out of that interview. You know, that guy is a real heel's heel. He might not be the best at presenting himself as such always. He might just be kind of channel-changing heat, but he will take the bump and eat the embarrassing loss for any of the guys on the roster there to elevate them, and that's what a heel is supposed to do, you know, make the babyface look better, and Miz... We all hated when Miz became champion, right? And we all loved when Bobby did. So Miz definitely played a part in that. And I just wanted to give a quick shout out to The Miz. And I agree with you. I hope he gets a decent opportunity. Not necessarily for Fastlane, but for WrestleMania. I assume it's going to be Drew. And honestly, you guys, you know, the rumor is 40,000 people in the at WrestleMania this year. I think they're going to be cheering for Bobby Lashley, or at least 50-50. I don't care how much of a heel they try to make Bobby Lashley, you know. There's just something about the respect of a guy who's been there for a while getting his due that we as fans appreciate. And for your low for the week of Daniel Bryan losing all the time in his matches, it upsets me too. I get it. You know, I want D-Bry to have a push before he retires as well. But I have to say, you know, we talked about 2014 earlier on the show, and it's not, clearly not 2014 anymore. And the Yes movement is still alive and well, I guess, to sound like a real WWE commentary team, but it's time for some new guys to get the chance in the spotlight. I think Daniel Bryan got his moment. I do think he deserves another world title run, as I like contradict myself while I speak, but I think with Roman Reigns as amazing as he is right now, and you already set the matchup with Edge, I don't know what they're doing wanting us to have Daniel Bryan in the main event, but now you're making it so Edge is a disappointment. I don't know what the psychology is, if any, on SmackDown with that whole thing, but with the world title picture. But my point being is, I think Daniel Bryan is okay with losing all these matches, and I guarantee he's booking himself to lose these matches, because it's been rumored that he has a little bit more creative freedom now and a little bit more input on the creative, and that's probably why SmackDown isn't as terrible as Raw. Or at least part of the reason. But yeah, so I think he wants to elevate other guys. I think he got his just due, and he wants other guys who deserve it to get their just due as well. So that's my response to your email. Hope you had a great week, and you guys can email me too. I would love to respond to anything you guys have to say on this show or regarding your highs and lows for the week. Shoot me an email and we will hopefully be able to get it on the air. And in regards to if you want to email me about anything about the AEW review show, which we do have an email already, I'll talk about that on Thursday when I do my review show. So that is all of the emails we have for the week, and I want to get into my high for the week, and I'm going to give you again a little bit more context because this was one of my favorite AEW moments ever so far and one of the most beautifully thought out long-term storyline swerves booking ever. So let me just shut up and give you guys the audio.
Because I was too busy building my own.
It's FTR Wardlow and Sean Spears.
And Tully Blanchard picking up Jericho with
Diesel!
And bloody Jericho powerbomb from the stage through a table, and the concrete floor has broken his fall. He's a bloody mess.
All right, guys, I feel like the show is going to run really long because another thing that there are just so many aspects to talk about, but I will try to keep it short because if you guys did listen to my review show, I did talk about this briefly. But for those of you who missed it, on AEW, the last segment of the night was the Inner Circle War Council meeting. This was a storyline that's going on for a long time with MJF, you know, little by little looking like he's trying to have take control of the Inner Circle. But thank God this company doesn't make its baby faces look stupid. So, you know, long story go away, Sammy Guevara comes out, says, you know, Jericho, I need you to see something, has a video recording of MJF trying to take over the Inner Circle. MJF is like, oh, I didn't want you guys to find out this way, but sick him, basically, you know, and tries to sick the Inner Circle on Jericho. Jericho, they look like they're going to attack him, him and Sammy Guevara, and then they turn around and they all look at MJF, and Jericho's like, you idiot, you think we don't talk or watch the show or whatever, thank God for that. And says, you know, MJF, like, we're going to kick you out of the Inner Circle. Look like they're going to give him a beat down. And then you hear the audio. MJF says, you know, I've been too busy creating a stable of my own. The lights go dark for a little while. And then appears FTR, Sean Spears, and Tully Blanchard, and Wardlow. Looks like MJF's new stable. And what a wonderful swerve. Because we all saw, like, I think knowing that the War Council was going on at the end of the show, right? We all saw something coming. And I assumed, as I'm sure most of you guys did, that MJF was going to turn on Jericho and he was going to take over the Inner Circle. Kind of still a good storyline, but just kind of, you could see it coming. Predictable. That's the word I'm looking for. But instead, right, the minute this happened, like, my head went with all these awesome flashes back to, like, all these little details that they put along the way to set this whole thing up. That time you saw Sean Spears and MJF gambling at the first show without a crowd, all this Four Horsemen talk, Sean Spears just on Dynamite a couple weeks ago, joining FTR with the whole mask thing. You've got that Arn Anderson flash the Four to Tully Blanchard a couple weeks ago as well. Just all this awesome little, and I can't go through all of them because I'm not going to bring the show to be an hour long, but, all these little story beats, right, that all add up together. And as a fan, you get rewarded by this awesome payoff that you thought was predictable, then didn't end up being predictable. There's a way to do a long-term storyline without it being predictable and predictable is not always bad, but being an amazing swerve. I don't know about you guys, like, I am ready to tune in next week to see what they do with the stable, what they're going to call them, if they're going to be called something Four Horsemen-like. I'd love to see if anybody else is going to join them. I am looking forward to this. And then we all get the Inner Circle babyface turn, which I said had also kind of been coming for a while. I'll quickly repeat myself from the review show, but I said, you know, Jericho's got the most singable music in AEW, right? Just all the fans, you should have an appreciation for Chris Jericho and what he does, so kind of hard to keep him a heel. Sammy Guevara already made the babyface turn. You had Santana and Ortiz that just looked like they were right on the cusp for so long now. And then Hager is hilarious with his championships. Yeah, right? Like, It works perfectly. And who would have thought the Inner Circle would be a babyface faction today? And I'm so pumped to see what they do with this next. You know that AEW can handle these multi-man tag team matches with so well, I guess. We'll just put it that way. And then another amazing thing that I don't think I've talked about yet about how AEW does its booking, but when you've got these giant factions, right, you can have all these like lead up matches, kind of like what they did similarly to the beginning of the show where they had Rey Fénix and Matt from the Young Bucks, Matt Jackson from the Young Bucks in a match. You get a tease of what the tag team match is going to be without actually giving us the tag team match. So believe it or not, you don't have to book the actual match to be a tease to the match, i.e. like Bayley and Sasha Banks on SmackDown, that awful payoff. Things like that, right? You can have the other guys in the factions fight other guys in the factions or whatever else. And WWE used to do that too. I feel like they don't nearly do it as much anymore. But to build up the feud to the main event pay-per-view match that these guys are going to have. So I'm super excited about this. I thought this was done so brilliantly, beautifully well. AEW as a whole was a wonderful show this week. If I don't give a shout out to the opening match again, I will not be my true Rey Fénix number one fan here and say what an unbelievable match between himself and Matt Jackson. Rey Fénix blows my mind every time he gets in the ring. So I do want to quickly mention that as I talk about the stuff that was wonderfully done this week. But yeah, guys, that is my high for the week, is the MJF turn, the new stable being created, the babyface turn of the Inner Circle, all within like 10 minutes. Let's talk about that. Like, well-used time of TV and really a beautiful beat to now get you back re-interested after the Revolution fallout, which they also did an amazing job. I think specifically Eddie Kingston and Jon Moxley at kind of tying that bow with the lack of explosion from the barbed wire death match. But that is all for this week, guys, because I have run super long and I'm rushing a little bit now through the show now. But that was my high for the week. If you didn't see it, it's on YouTube. Go check it out. Wonderful swerve. And then they did a lot of damage to the Inner Circle. Sammy Guevara's head went through a chair. Beautiful visual. I think Hager got a bottle crashed against his head. The Santana and Ortiz took a pile driver with their hands handcuffed behind their back. And then obviously Jericho got beaten and bloodied, and you heard, I think the audio kind of made it sound like Tully Blanchard did the powerbomb. But no, Wardlow powerbombed Jericho, you know, off the stage, through a table. All wonderful beatdown, wonderfully done, great heel heat, and I'm excited to see what they do next week. And that is what episodic television is supposed to do, so beautifully, beautifully done, and I will stop, you know, drooling over how amazing AEW's booking can be and leave you with that. Before I forget, though, I do want to give you guys my random match recommendation for the week, and I think I had a little bit of a weird one this week, a little bit of a random one, but Battlegrounds 2015, the primetime players versus the New Day, and the New Day were actually heel at this time. I mean, you forget how talented Darren Young was. I think he's doing amazing on the indies now, and how electrifyingly strong Titus O'Neil could be. The spine buster he does, like the amount of height he would get on it. And then the New Day deserve the credit for being such great heels. I mean, they could have gotten over the babyface Roman Reigns in 2014, 15, whatever I just said that year was. They were that great at being heels. And I think that's why they turned babyface, because we appreciate great work as fans in wrestling. So yeah, oh, last thing I'll mention, again, I know I'm going on it today, this week, guys, but I do not want to forget about the blow for the week. We talked about Raquel Gonzalez and Dakota Kai. Can we talk quickly about the fact that Io Shirai comes backstage, challenges Raquel Gonzalez for the, you know, she wants her to be her next challenger. Great. We all saw that coming. Looking forward to that. Raquel Gonzalez is going to be a great women's champion. I assume she'll beat Io Shirai, but Raquel Gonzalez said that, you know, doesn't matter that we lost the titles, guys. Like, we had them first. Like, what are we, five? Like, this company is so keen on making history and making this and doing that. Like, no, I don't care about making history. I care about who wins and loses. Okay, apparently, Raquel Gonzalez doesn't. But I said I was done, so I'm done. That's the last thing I'm going to say about it. And I hope you guys have a wonderful rest of your week. I will talk to you on Thursday on the AEW review show. If you have not watched AEW and have not listened to that show, I recommend. This is probably going to be a perfect week to tune in for the first time, and we'd love to have you. So thanks for listening, guys, and I hope you have a great week.